Yes, just gone past 19 minutes past 7 on Sabah al-Muslim, and now we cross over live to Hafidha Rehana Umar, who will be giving us an update, the Middle East report. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Rehana.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and assalamu alaikum to your listeners, Brother Isha.
Jazakallah khair, Rehana, and I'm sure with this new year, new hope, new excitement. The stories seem to not be dying off. In fact, we're starting off 2016 with Saudi and Iran tensions, but we'll get to that a bit later. Let's start off with Gaza. January 2016 marks 10 years now since Israel's blockade on Gaza Strip. Has anything changed, Rehana?
Unfortunately, nothing. If anything, it's worsened. When you travel to Gaza, Brother Ijaz, and you shared with us your first-hand account, it was already a devastating account at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And as the years pass by, it seems to just worsen. Israeli-led blockade and occupation, and now what seems to be more of an internationally-backed blockade, whether it's been spoken about or not. We know that the Israeli authorities have closed crossings into the territory. Egypt's worked in compliance with Israel over the years about this, and very often they aren't Palestinians allowed to cross unless they're going for Hajj or their patients or students.
Mm-hmm.
So over the years, what Israel has done to Gaza is to bring it to the brink of collapse. We've read about reports in the last 2 to 3 years about what's being done and what's happening in Gaza now can cause just to live in Gaza in 2016 to be completely inviable, meaning people cannot live in Gaza. It's impossible to live a normal life there. They have chronic shortages of medicine and hospital disposables. The shelves literally are empty in hospitals and clinics. Israel continues to try to legalize the blockade to make it last as long as possible, to use every means possible to do so. We know there's widespread popular support, Muslims, non-Muslims around the world. They've tried to break the siege by sea over the years. And then Mavi Marmara seemed to dampen that whole spirit, unfortunately. And in the course of the last 10 years, there have been massive military offensives, 2006, 2008 and 9. 2012, 2014, and that was the most destructive of them all. We understand that the unemployment rate in Gaza stands to be one of the highest, if not the highest in the world. More than 200,000 people are unemployed. Economic crisis continues to worsen in Gaza itself. We've reported as Radio Islam many times about the issues like the sewage system, about people studying by candlelight, not just for 1 or 2 hours, but for days on end.
Yes.
We've heard of children that have died because of electrical faults, open electrical work that's been taking place and nothing being done to stop it. So when we look at Gaza now, 10 years on from the initial occupation, as they enter the 10th year, things seem to just be getting worse by the day.
Definitely, but one thing you can say about the people of Gaza, they are the most resilient people in the world, definitely. Moving on to Saudi Arabia now, and with the news last night or yesterday with regards to Saudi Arabia and Iran tensions growing, Saudi Arabia's recent executions have been viewed by many as a new and risky approach to political issues in the region. Does this present a risk of conflict escalation, Rehana?
I think it does. It may not be on the ground necessarily, but I think diplomatically there is an escalation of fury, so to speak, amongst the two countries. It seems to worsen. Initially, many thought that Yemen was going to be the in-between for Saudi and Iran's proxy war. But it is, as you said, a risky new approach. It's going to create these proxy wars that's going to deepen, it's going to worsen, and the only ones that are going to suffer is the people on the ground in Yemen itself, as well as those being persecuted in parts of Iran as well as in Saudi Arabia. We know that demonstrators were angry when the news broke on Saturday of the execution of Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr. The United States tried to step in and ask that there should be a de-escalation of any type of violence or even tension because they were afraid of the consequences, rightly so, in the Middle East. But now it seems that the geopolitical issues between Saudi Arabia and Iran are much more volatile, much more dangerous than we had initially thought them to be. Iran in the past was very hesitant about foreign policy in Saudi Arabia, but they always stayed away from interfering on domestic policy, even when it came to Shiites within Saudi Arabia who allegedly were being persecuted. But now it seems that there's complete change of this. And now there's a step where there's the Arab military intervention of Syria and of Yemen versus Iran's military intervention of Yemen and Syria.
Yes.
And this all plays into what's happening throughout the region right now. It is very much geopolitics, but it's what's important is to see how people on the ground are going to respond to this, both in Iran as well as in Saudi Arabia, where it's going to cause people to speak up, to talk about issues, and if they're not talking about the issues, they're going to respond more violently to what is happening. Another country we should be watching out with regards to the Syria-Iran, Saudi Arabia issue is Bahrain, and very few of us have been focusing on that in the last week, especially mainstream media. Where does Bahrain fit into this? What role will they play as a military base for countries like the United States, as well as many covert operations for Saudi Arabia and other Gulf countries? They have a large Shia population. How will this influence their sentiments? Will they stand politically? Many of them have been imprisoned. We know Bahrain has a terrible human rights record. So how will this impact on Bahrain? Will it have far-reaching consequences, these tensions about the executions in parts like Bahrain and other parts of the Middle East? So I think it's very much a case of Gulf countries now on tenterhooks, watching out very carefully to what is going to happen. Tehran will probably try to prolong the conflict in Yemen. That's what many political analysts are considering it to be. And they will try to exhaust Saudi Arabia. And then that's going to probably lead to a sharp drop in oil prices. Now, the difference between Riyadh and Tehran about oil prices is that Tehran sees itself trained to face tough conditions. They've been living under sanctions for close to 30 years. But Riyadh itself is not. It will also be interesting to see whether European countries and the United States, if and who they side with in this entire proxy war. Diplomatic fires are all on all fronts right now, with the embassies recalling their members, diplomatic missions being sent home and called home. So it will be a very important story for us to be watching, to be following, highly charged emotions, but geopolitics at the front of it all. It will affect the oil export, it will affect Gulf countries, as well as deepening and worsening conflicts between Sunni and Shia in the region. It's something that the region does not need now, especially not now.
Definitely, and also we definitely show that this Saudi and Iran tensions are going to be moving at a vast pace. This story will develop at a rapid pace, Rehana. On to our
Spot on, yes.
Yes, and now to close it up, let's discuss Syria. Amidst all the heartache and horror, there's also been stories of hope and heroism. Share with us some of Syria's heroes of the past years, stories that moved you.
Well, I think one of them was the story about the first responder groups. They're known as Syria's White Helmets.
Yep.
Yep, and that was a story that took place in the story of Mohammed Rehan, and he went missing in a government airstrike. It was in a market in Douma, outside of Damascus. And so this airstrike killed about 100 people or more. And his family were sure that because he was in that area, he had been killed. So they held a funeral in absentia for him. So, you know, we would commiserate with those that have lost a loved one for 3 days. So on the third day, he came home. He was filled with dust, you know, and he just walked into his family home, and they were all grieving, but they were astonished to see that he had been buried alive for 3 days under rubble, but he was rescued. He's now being called the living martyr. And there's many others, in fact, hundreds of others like him, who've been saved by civilians who risk their lives to rescue others. Another story, and this may not necessarily be from Syrian heroes themselves, but it's a story of Turkish people, and the story went viral. Turkish couple who decided not to have this huge wedding banquet for family and friends. They went to a soup kitchen in Kilis, near the border of Syria, and they served food to about 4,000 Syrian refugees, all dressed in their wedding finery. And I thought that was something so heroic, so selfless. Another story that really interested me was a man who was selling in Beirut, a refugee, and he was selling pens.
Hmm.
And there was pictures going viral, you know, him holding pens in one hand, blue pens, and the other hand holding a sleeping child of probably about four or five years old. The story went viral. People put hashtag buy pens. People wanted to help him and find him. And when they were able to locate him in Beirut, they helped him. He has a strong business acumen. He now has three businesses. And he employs other Syrian refugees as well and hands out bread to others. And lastly, a story. I know schools haven't opened in South Africa as yet, so the younger audience listening in, here's a story that may touch their hearts. It was of a boy, a 17-year-old teenager. His name was Aslan. And he had a husky puppy named Rose. And he refused to leave Syria without his puppy. So together, Aslan and Rose went on this epic journey from Syria to Europe. He walked 500 kilometers with his pup. And then a film crew from the UNHCR spotted them. People were just touched that he was like many others. Some people didn't want to leave behind their pigeons or their cats or even their fish. And they carried them across. In the midst of war, like you said, the heartache, the pain, the devastation, it's important that we reflect and we look back at stories that touch our hearts, that make us have faith in humanity again.
Definitely, indeed. There's always hope, as they say, Rehana. Jazakallah khair for all your expertise and the insight you brought to us this morning on the Middle East Report. Have a wonderful day, inshallah. Jazakallah khair for your time.
You're most welcome. And to you and your listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, that was Sister Rehana Umar speaking to us from Kuala Lumpur, giving us the Middle East report and painting a picture of what are the stories that will be making headlines throughout 2016. We'll see already as the Saudi and Iran tensions continue. Syria, we know, isn't going anywhere. This story continues to develop day by day. And the confusion does definitely reigns into exactly what is transpiring out there. Another story that has not received a lot of mainstream media coverage is the Oregon attacks, where 150 white supremacists have taken over a nature reserve and occupied it. And the hashtag Oregon under attack, you should check it out. But mainstream media seem to have, they weren't sure how to spin this story. How do you say white terrorists on CNN? They wouldn't go with that. So the story sort of shelved for now. It will be interesting to see what transpires out of that story. I see someone has created a hashtag for it, Vanilla ISIS.